The triad is a lively scene. As springtime dances in, homeowners are ready to sell, and their built equity is a win. Great homes will be for sale, with a new deal behind each door. The Sharp Mortgage Team is excited to help in the spring of 2024. With wisdom and commitment, we'll help you chart your move. A quick conversation and pre-approval will get you in the groove. With pre-approval secured, you'll be steps ahead, you'll see, ready to embrace the home buying journey with confidence and glee. From cozy cottages to sprawling estates, you'll find the perfect fit, and your real estate agent's skill set help and determined grit. With a wealth of knowledge and a heart for your buying success, we'll navigate the housing market, ensuring nothing less. Don't let the media fool you. You deserve a wonderful new nest. With the Sharp Mortgage Team, you're poised for nothing less than the best. Embrace the warmth of springtime, flowers, and skies of blue. Partner with the Sharp Mortgage Team. We're always here for you.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode where we talk all things money with our certified financial planner, Jennifer Johnson. She is with Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. Jennifer, if there were two letters that best summarized 2024, right? It's got to be the letters A and I.
That's right? True. That's true.
AI is affecting almost everything we do in our daily lives.
Right.
I use it for the podcast, I'll be honest, because it saves some time. It can generate,
does it? It does.
It helps to generate show notes. It helps to generate text for social media clips. Sure. It can actually pull clips that they think would be interesting to be able to use for social promotion. So AI is very popular in the podcast space. So but today we're going to talk about AI and how it can possibly contribute or not contribute to your world, correct?
Right, right. Yeah, it's a hot topic amongst financial advisors too. It's been the talk, certainly, as you said, of this year across like all sorts of industries, I think. And I've seen something similar where folks would use some sort of artificial intelligence to generate the notes on a meeting like this, a virtual meeting I was a part of. And I thought it was actually kind of cool. In our world, you know, in financial advice and financial planning, it's still really new, right? I guess it's new everywhere, but it's certainly new in our world. We tend to be probably a little bit slower to adopt new technology than maybe other industries that are perhaps less regulated, but there's a lot of talk about it now. And there's, I think, a lot of questions probably amongst investors, amongst, you know, people at large that might be wondering, you know, how does this work? You know, can I use AI to substitute for, you know, a financial advisor? You know, what are the pros and cons of that? And I thought that might be a good topic for folks, you know, to lean into today.
Yeah. So we are using a story that you found, which is called "Can AI Replace Your Financial Advisor? Not yet, but wait." That's the headline of the story. So tell us why this story caught your attention and some of your big picture takeaways before we get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, and I think this was actually last year, you know, when ChatGPT became really popular, and there was some, you know, question amongst our field of, you know, how does this change our world? You know, is something where, you know, people are going to look to AI, what they might look to their financial advisor for? Is it something we could use to make us more productive, or is it a straight up replacement, you know, for the way that we've, you know, earned a living? And I think there's certainly some fear out there, you know, amongst, you know, the industry, other financial advisors. And let me say, I'm not fearful of it necessarily. I think, to me, I'm a bit skeptical just because of some of the early things we've seen about accuracy and so forth, which I think we'll get into today. because we've all heard about it, you know, writing term papers, right, for college students. I believe there was a story. Was there a lawyer that had it write a deposition or something? Had it write something that that made up some case studies or something of that nature? I'm obviously pulling from memory that I don't remember real well from that.
I don't recall that story, but it's certainly believable.
Yeah. We'll look it up and see if we can find it in the show notes, but in the legal field, it's probably really close like to ours, right? In some ways. And so that, you know, where accuracy really matters. And I think there's so much promise right out there with AI. There's been a lot of excitement, you know, when you look at the market, you know, and what's done well as far as a sector this year, technology, and particularly those companies that are early adopters or leaders in AI, have been showing a lot of returns. And there's just so much excitement about like, what could it do? Right. I mean, how could it make us as humans more productive? You know, how can it, could it even replace us? You know, and so there's just so much of an unknown and so much excitement that I just couldn't help but, you know, read this article and see what it might have in store, you know, for us. And it likens itself in there to the healthcare field, you know, where I guess they're adopting AI too, to maybe help healthcare professionals possibly find diagnoses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And we haven't really seen that too much in our world, but it's possibly coming, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, as I mentioned before, I've adopted it in certain ways.
Yeah.
To me, AI is a tool for efficiency. But I've never really looked at it as a replacement for anything. Mm-hmm. I've just found little ways to help make things more efficient. Like, look, I mean, if it can scan through long documents and be able to provide summaries of those things for you, then that makes things more efficient.
Right.
In your field, like, what does this article talk about in terms of where it can be advantageous, where it can make an impact in your world?
Yeah. I think maybe similar in doing research and putting together portfolios. You know, a lot of our time is spent, you know, constructing the right portfolio, the right risk for the client, you know, what optimizes return and minimizes risk given somebody's goals. So I think there's a lot of promise around that. And Frank, and to be frank too, we've in many ways had that already. Like in our world, a number of years ago, there was a lot of talk and excitement about what we called a robo-advisor at the time. I don't know if that term was really popular. And this would have been a number of years ago. It would have been before COVID even. It really was at a time where maybe people were starting to do more online with their investments. And it was this idea that like they really didn't need a human advisor at all, right? You would just, in those programs, and you can still do them today, you know, you would go online in theory and answer a questionnaire about your goals, about your, it would ask, prompt you certain questions about risk. And then it will kind of spit out, you know, of course you would have to tell them, you know, how much money you have to invest and that kind of thing. And it was sort of spit out, here's a recommended portfolio for you, Adam, or for you, Jennifer. And then in theory, you would link that up to your, like your bank account. And then you would basically make transfers and things would start to happen. And there was this thought of like, okay, you know, people in the future won't even need an advisor, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're just going to answer questions. They're just going to take questionnaires. And I think what we found after that, which is one reason I think I'm, you know, not sitting here shaking in my boots that, you know, AI is going to replace me, is that we found in the industry that there was only minimal adoption of that, right? Mm-hmm. People were very, hesitant to just simply answer questions on their own and then trust their most critical money to those programs. Because as probably in your world too, the tools are only as good as the person using it, right?
I mean, yes.
You know, you can go online and use planning tools to plan for your retirement or for your kids' college, But the assumptions that you put in there are really critical. That's really going to result in the outcome. And I think a lot of times people don't even know what assumptions are built into those calculators. And if they have to choose, you know, inflation assumptions, return assumptions, they just don't know what to put in, right? And so I think there was just for that reason, those robo programs, you know, were only minimally accepted. Now, AI, I think, really is in some ways evolving that to where you almost get like a human-like quality, right? In theory, instead of you just answering a question, you know, you might have, you know, what I'm envisioning, and this is so early, we don't know, but you might almost have like a human-like conversation, right? With what's not a human, it's an artificial intelligence, right? I think that's kind of what people are sort of envisioning. You know, to me, one of the worries, and I would be curious what your thoughts are, this is like, you know, and people would obviously, I think you can kind of tell, you know, at least right now and working with AI, if you call in, you know, a customer service number and you realize that's not a person that's asking me questions, you know, that's a machine. You know, how comfortable would you be sharing, you know, the sensitive personal financial information with, you know, what's it, maybe an AI bot instead of, you know, me?
Yeah, because in order to process what you're saying, they have to ingest information, they have to ingest data.
That's
and
right.
Some of that information may be very sensitive and confidential. Right. So there has to be a level of trust there.
Yeah.
You know, to me, and this is something that's referenced in the story, I'll go ahead and mention that this is from the Wall Street Journal. But we'll link this in the show notes as the source. But while AI chatbots, whatever is being used in this situation to arrive at the desired result, it can understand words, but it can't understand, not yet at least, it can't understand emotions. And what you do financially can be emotionally driven. Are you an inherently risky person? Are you in a situation where you want to be conservative? That's a very fluid thing because that could change based on circumstances. Often we always talk about this with whatever we're discussing on this podcast, that everybody's situation is unique and you have to ask questions and get advice based on what your own situation is. And that's a very tough thing to navigate for artificial intelligence. And so, like I said, that's to me, that's why I wouldn't dive headfirst into something like this for something so personal and so situational and can be driven on emotions or what your current situation is in your life. So that's kind of what I go to. And I believe like part two of this story, it talks about empathy, which is kind of what I'm referencing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was surprised that the story seemed to suggest the AI was doing a good job at empathy, which I would have thought that's what it would have struggled with kind of the most, would be like, you know, that it could recognize and sort of know how to respond to that human emotion. I think you still have to have that human, I think what you're saying is to be comfortable to share, you know, and to be somewhat recognizing their own feelings. I thought maybe the most, and to me, maybe the biggest concern right now is that some of the inaccuracies, what I think they call it, what hallucinations maybe with AI, where it just simply makes stuff up. That's what I would call it, you know, where you just, I guess it scans and it's trying to ingest information and then make inferences from that, right? And somehow just sort of makes some stuff up, which... Yeah. I think it's going to be a real problem, you know, in our world of, you know, we don't want to just make stuff. We want to go with, with the best information we have. To me, one of the most interesting things too, which I was surprised to see that early studies have shown that the AI is doing a good job maybe with empathy. I was more surprised, I guess. I would think AI would be like very objective, right? And the thing that surprised me the most, I think, was that the at least in these early uses of ChatGPT is really what they're referring to is that in circumstances, I guess it was maybe prompted to make some decisions that was almost would make some of the human fallacies like, you know, like doubling down, you know, if mm-hmm. you have a loss to try to make up that loss, when in reality, that might not be the best thing if you've lost a lot of money in crypto, which is the example they give here. You know, the ChatGPT would then try to make that up by kind of doubling down on that instead of maybe diversifying, you know, yeah. would be the way that we would approach it. I thought that was really interesting that it almost became human-like in like a bad way.
Yeah, the algorithm would determine that, would take the buy low, sell high practice right. and apply that in most, if not all situations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just surprised. I would have thought that you wouldn't have that issue, you know, with, you know, almost getting emotional, if that makes sense. Like the AI was like too human-like in that way. And that he had kind of had some of the same problems.
Yeah.
You know, that we as humans experience the same sort of emotions.
When the weather warms up, so does the real estate market. Sounds obvious, right? It's true. Spring typically means more home sales. But how will the current interest rates affect people's decisions? What about inventory? Is it high or low? And does that benefit the buyer or the seller? And how do those factors take into account a certain price point or area of the triad? Now it's not so obvious, is it? That's why you should turn to the Ginther Group to make sense of it all. You need someone you can rely on to assess your situation, read the data and trends, and steer you in the right direction. Interest rates, inventory, even new construction. There are so many factors that impact our local market. And you should get your information from the folks right here in our backyard. Contact Blake Ginther and the Ginther Group today. 336-283-8689 or visit theginthergroup.com. Buying, selling, investing, or just learning, whatever you need, start now. And like me, you can become a Ginther Group client for life.
Well, that's the thing is you can't, even if you use it, you can't blindly trust it. I mean, you're going to, even if you decide to use this to help make recommendations or change your investments, you're going to have to review those things anyway and make sure that it's making the right decisions and decisions that are in line with you. So what are you really saving there?
Right.
Because I'll be honest, you know, I use, like I said at the beginning, I will take an audio file and I'll upload it to an AI platform and it'll generate a summary and show notes and promotional materials. And for the most part, those are really good. They're really accurate, but they're not perfect.
Right.
If I don't comb through those and look for misspelled names or awkwardly written sentences,
right.
Then it's going to show up that way and it's going to be incorrect. And so that's kind of my experience is, I mean, you still have to monitor those things.
Yeah.
And so, cause it's not perfect. It's not. I'm amazed by what it can do now, and it's constantly evolving. But I know that there would be things that would be wrong if I didn't kind of, you know, follow up behind it, check through.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that makes perfect sense for you to do that. It just makes you more efficient, right? And so you can do more podcasts and just do you know, cover maybe more things and touch things you couldn't. And the stakes are really low in that, right? Like if the worst thing is if you missed it and you had a misspelling or an awkward sentence, the stakes are pretty low there. I think if you screw up somebody's portfolio, you know, like that seems to be a worse outcome to me.
It's a lot worse than misspelling a word or a show note of a podcast.
Right. You know, if all of a sudden you've made a really bad assumption, you know, because one of the interesting things about, you know, one of the things they mentioned here, their first point is about debiasing, because, you know, I think that is one of our roles, you know, as a good advisor, is to help you make decisions day to day that are consistent with those long-term goals. Right. And we've talked before how like people, you know, it, unfortunately, just in their day to day, a lot of times kind of sabotage their goals and not realizing it. You know, we talked about sports betting, right, one time, and how you can kind of get caught up in that. Impulse purchases, coffees, just getting in the habit of, you know, making purchases, particularly on cards, that, you know, would not be consistent with those goals. You know, I think it's going to be, you know, hard at this point, at least, for a sort of an AI advisor to really help people understand that. And then, you know, the worry is too, like, if it starts to develop kind of human tendencies in there and in the portfolios too, you know, it's just interesting how, like, depending upon the data it pulls, like it mentioned in there, you know, how people, if it looks at a 1 year time horizon, you know, it may give you a different result, right, for what you need to be doing with the portfolio. It may be too conservative, right, because maybe it's a bad year that it's pulling. If it looks at a long time period, you know, more, you'll end up with maybe something that's more appropriate for a long term portfolio. And I think the challenge with AI right now is you don't know what and all information it's pulling, right, to give you that.
Yeah. And when it comes to there's a couple other points in here discussing best interest, you know, having the best interest of the client, the investor.
Right.
And then consistency. Right.
Right. Right.
How does that tend to perform in this
world? Yeah. I mean, I think that's what I was sort of talking around with consistency there, right? I mean, you may consult AI today and get an answer, and tomorrow, if you ask the same question, right, you might get a different answer depending upon what it pulls from. Right. And I think you want your advisor to be consistent, I think, with the advice they give, but particularly if it's, you know, a long-term goal, you know, like you said, people's emotions can kind of throw them off track, right? And a lot of times our role is to bring them back to say, okay, particularly in difficult markets, to say, yes, you know, if this is 2022, markets were down a lot, right? And a lot of our role during that year was to say, remember that we have bad years, right? We expect that. You don't want to let that derail your plans. Mm-hmm. You know, don't make an emotional decision in here. And right now, I don't think we can rely on AI to be consistent, you know, in that advice. You're not sure what it might say. The discussion about best interest and putting the client's interest first is an interesting one. Certainly as, you know, as a CFP or certified financial planner, we're required to act as a fiduciary. So we're required to put our client's best interest first. You know, so this idea of like having conflicts of interest, you would think AI would, you know, would not have to worry about that, right? Because, you know, ChatGPT is not necessarily making money from how many questions, you know, it at least not to my knowledge, right? Like the way it answers your question about, you know, how to save for your child's college doesn't directly impact their income, right? So you would think in many ways it could be unbiased. You know, it's not going to direct you toward certain investments. There doesn't seem to be any incentive there. But I guess also that could change, right? I'm not sure. You know, I think that's an overstatement to say every company. There's a lot of companies trying to figure out how to make AI profitable for them, right?
Sure.
And so I think there could certainly be some bias work its way in there. I think it's in many ways too early to, you know, kind of tell, you know, what does that mean? Is AI influenced by advertising, you know, that it might see? Is it able to be skeptical, you know, like a human might, and realize, hey, if this fund family funded this article, maybe, you know, that information is skewed in some way. I don't know that it's yeah. that sophisticated yet.
Well, and that's the thing is all of this AI technology is developed and owned by somebody, right?
Right.
By a company. Right. And so whatever's being
our goodness either, right? It's like
right, yeah. Right. It's being done to as a business for business reasons. Right?
Yeah.
So you gotta keep that in mind in terms of you know, what you're using and what it's designed to do, not just for you, but what it's also designed for the people that created it.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, you say it's very unclear in terms of where this is going to end up. And I think we would all agree with that in a different ways, but what do you think the future will look like as it relates to AI in your line of work?
I would see it being a sort of a tool or like supplement to your advisor. They give an example in the healthcare field where maybe if you come to your doctor with a condition and maybe artificial intelligence gives the doctor, here's a range of things, you know, this person might be experiencing, and then you still need that human interaction, right? And maybe it brings up something the doctor hadn't thought of that they can investigate. I would see something like that in our world where maybe, you know, you've got a client facing a problem or, you know, or a goal, maybe hopefully a goal, and you know, there's an avenue, maybe it gives you two or three different paths, you know, you could take. And maybe one that I wouldn't have thought of on my own. I think that's it. And it's interesting. One of the things they mentioned in there was a study. This is a few months back. In fairness, I read this article back in October. But I think it's probably still relevant that the CFP board, which CFP is the Certified Financial Planner mm-hmm. board that I mentioned, had surveyed people and consumers or investors, you know, to ask their feelings about it. And I think this is fairly consistent. There's a huge range, you know, 33% were pretty skeptical. 25% were hopeful and 13% had no idea, you know, or undecided, I guess, is the way they put it. 12% were worried. 10% felt empowered. 7% just said, we just don't know enough. I think most of what they found, looks like about over 50% felt like it might supplement mm-hmm. their financial advisor, but not take the place of it. It looks like only 11% felt like this would completely remove the need
yeah.
for a human advisor. And I should say the time frame is they were asked, okay, in the next 3 to 5 years, you know, what do you see? So, you know, near term, but not 20 years down the road.
Yeah. This is not a black and white type of thing. This is, and I think this is the way you're thinking about it, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a tool to allow me to do my job better.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm not opposed to using it in some capacity. I think I have a healthy skepticism, you know, about it because of just some of the inaccuracies we've seen in data. So mm-hmm. The way I would use it would be certainly if I was using it for any data, you know, I think you really have to be aware of that. I think taking notes, like you said, you know, having to take notes in a meeting, great way to use it. Pull information that you can then review, great way to use it. Maybe mm-hmm. come up with some ideas. I think, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. And then you know, consider those. I think it's hard for me to imagine it, you know, fully taking the place of an advisor. But I will say that, you know, we have a lot of people out there and there are only so many advisors, right? So one of the things that we could be hopeful for is that, you know, this might be serving folks, especially folks that may not, you know, have the resources. They may be struggling more with debt, right? And just aren't at the point in their life where they can afford to pay for financial advice or have resources where, you know, a financial advisor could effectively work with them. Maybe that's the area, you know, that has the greatest potential for this as a standalone service. I don't really know exactly what that would look like, but you just realistically know as people's, you know, so I'm sort of mid-career myself, you know, as people get further in their careers, you know, all the advice they'll give you is to, you know, work with higher and higher net worth individuals. You and I've talked about this, I think, before on here, and that I have a passion for helping people. And so that's a hard thought for me, because so the people that need you most aren't necessarily really high net worth individuals, right? And so if this is a way that folks can access advice, I just hope it guides them in the right path is all I'll say.
That's well said. That's a really good summary. And I think you captured your feelings and probably the way a lot of other people feel about it really well. I think that's a great place to tie a bow around this conversation. So unless there's anything else you want to offer folks on this particular topic.
No, I think we'll follow it, right? Maybe as new developments come out, we'll have a follow-up episode to see how things are going. I think it's so new, right? It's just a new thing. You know, definitely everybody's thinking about it, and we'll see how it's definitely going to change our world. And it'll just be interesting to see, hopefully, like we said, for the better. Certainly it's my goal to help as many people as possible. And I think if AI can be a part of that, you know, that's great.
That's, yeah. Again, well said. Okay. As we always like to do here at the close, if people want to talk to you, a human, they'll get human interaction. What's the way that they can?
You can check us out online. Our website is 3magnoliasfinancialadvisors.com, and that's all spelled out. You can email me, and a human will respond. I don't have any help with my emails, so that
would
be nice.
I can confirm that.
My email is Jennifer, my first name, Jennifer, @3magnolias.com. We're here local to the Triad area. We're in Winston-Salem. So our phone number is 336-701-1600. And we try our best to answer that too live. Worst case, you'll go to a voicemail and I'll call you back. But we haven't figured out how to get AI to help us with that. So so you're going to be talking to a human. Give us a call.
That's all right. We'll definitely give you a pass for that. And if you didn't have a chance to write all that down, it is in the show notes. I cannot guarantee that a human typed it into the show notes.
If it's all messed up, it wasn't Adam or me, right? It was going to blame AI for that.
All right, Jennifer.
You'll just have to listen if you don't like the notes.
That's right. Exactly. Thank you for the insight, Jennifer. We appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks so much.
Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors, located at 110 Oakwood Drive, Suite 480, Winston-Salem, North Carolina, 27103. 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors and Cetera Advisor Networks are not affiliated. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. The market indices discussed are unmanaged. Additional risks are associated with international investing, such as currency fluctuations, political and economic stability, and differences in accounting standards. The views depicted in this material are for information purposes only and not necessarily those of Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC. They should not be considered specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Neither Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, nor any of its representatives may give legal or tax advice.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.